Anyway, I guess we better start the show here. Fire us off.
Mm-hmm.
Fire us off, Joe!
Too exciting, man. 3-2-1.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
All right, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza. Pizza, pizza.
Showtime!
While you were making egg foo young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a limousine tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll link it bad. For the streaming, go direct to DLNGS.org. And IC channels are LinuxLink.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the castle's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 844 of the Links Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
How's it going, man?
We have Joel.
Good evening.
We have Rich.
At the Hughes Outpost Orlando Command.
And we have Joe.
Hello.
I don't know, for some reason, those cats sounded a lot longer than they did in the past. This is really long. Too long. Anyway, Joel, you right before Rich, you were about to bring this up. I think it was Joel brought it up. You were about to talk about something.
Rich,
you had earned attaboy points, and
yes, sir.
Rich was coming down to give you a present.
Just so everybody knows, annually there's this event called the Super Bowl, and after that event, there's a lot of TVs that go on sale. So the best time to buy a TV is now, and I've been kind of window shopping for a 70-inch TV for the living room since we got a 70-inch for the bedroom, and the 50-inch of the living room is looking like, you know, a laptop. So the only thing I would say about 70-inch, one, you have to go 4K. Two, I would get at least a 120Hz refresh rate. The 60 might be okay, but definitely 120 is something you're going to be looking for. So you'll see cheaper TVs. So if you go to techbargains.com, I think there was a 70-inch like Walmart house brand, and I think it had a Roku built into it. It's a 4K TV, but it was 60Hz, which may be decent enough. You know, definitely if you're gaming, you want the higher refresh rate. But, you know, maybe if you're just watching regular TV, 60Hz is good. But definitely 4K and 70-inch. I don't know if anybody makes anything less than that. But there are deals out there. So keep an eye out, because that's something you might be interested in.
Are these deals a combination of overstock and returned stock for people who just like bust it out, watch the Super Bowl, and take it back?
Dude, I don't know about that.
Some of them
that
are.
That might be a hell of an advantage. All right, so the other thing about shopping, there are places like Sam's Club and Costco. I don't know. This is old information. Things may have changed. But there are items they will take back, no questions asked, up to 90 days later. And one of those items is like a DSLR setup. So that kind of gives you the guarantee that, hey, if you got one and the price changed or whatever, or a new model comes out. So let me give you one more shopping tip. So if you're going to buy something like a DSLR, let's just take the Canon line, for example. Don't ever just see the deal at Costco and say, I know Costco always gives me the best price on that deal, so I'll buy that. Go to the manufacturer site and make sure a new version didn't come out, because you may wait a few more weeks and get that camera at a better price a few more weeks in the future.
You mean the one that you see right there at a good price? Double check
right
to see if a new one's coming out, because that one that you saw, not the new one, will probably be
right
at a reduced price. Okay.
Correct, correct. Right. Like, say there's a Canon T7i on the shelf in Costco, and you're like, wow, that's a great deal, let me get that. But meanwhile, you go to the Canon site, and you see there's a T8i. Now, so there's two factors here. One factor is, hey, it may have a new feature I want. The other factor may be like, hey, it's going to drive the price of this thing down. And I had an idea, but I was not going to share it publicly. But anyhow, definitely there's opportunities out there, and, you know, a wise shopper gets a good deal. So, you know, be careful out there. So, can I filibuster?
Go ahead.
Do we do this by Robert's Rules of Order? Permission to filibuster, sir? So, I got my Nook running just before the show, but a few days before the show, I read that DaVinci Resolve Blackmagic, the free edition, which isn't open source, but it's free, which runs, you know, Linux, Mac, and Windows. The new version 16.1, I think all the 16 versions, I'd have to check to what version it last worked on, requires an NVIDIA card. And guess what my Intel Nook does not have?
NVIDIA. Anybody?
That is correct. It does not have an NVIDIA card.
Well, you know, let me ask you a question, because I read that too. And I was wondering, do they recommend an NVIDIA?
It says requires.
Or will it just absolutely not run on anything but an NVIDIA?
It, so far, you know, I've been looking at the logs. I can't launch it. And, you know, basically it says send the logs in. But, all right, so there was a YouTube video of some guy that worked at Intel that I saw a couple of days ago. And he worked, they weren't too, because they're not open source, they shared, you know, some code with him. He was able to get a prior version to work with the Intel graphics card. So I might be version locked several back. I'm going to check it out, and then I may reevaluate and see where I'm going to go with this. So I'm a little bummed. I was very excited about having a, you know, 32 gig machine with video editing capability, blah, 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 SSD. And holy cow,
32
Ubuntu.
Gigs in a Nook?
Yeah, and
wow.
i7, Gen 7 i7. And the thing boots crazy fast. You know, I've got an SSD in there. It just crazy fast boot.
In a related note there, OpenShot just added hardware acceleration for rendering videos, which is a great feature to have. I just saw that. I forget what version it is, but let me see if I can find a story on that. But that's a good thing. That was one thing that OpenShot never had. Premiere and a lot of other editors, especially closed source ones, always had was the ability to utilize that 3D graphics chip to accelerate the rendering of video. So now OpenShot can do it.
I'm just gonna tweak a friend and listener, my friend Brad Alexander. Instead
Vulcan
of listening
Rider.
To the show live, Brad asked me the next day about the show and the content, if he should listen or not. And then he tells me, blah, 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 you went on about blah, blah, blah too much. And so he's able to listen live, and he usually messages me during the show. I'm like, just listen to the damn show live and don't ask me about it.
Yeah, it's not like there's anything good to watch on Wednesdays.
What, people watch TV?
I do sometimes.
Anyhow, Brad, we all love you. Unlike Dore. So, just...
Yeah. That's actually my trick for when I go to the gym. I make
what,
sure
you call
that
Dore?
I make sure I have something to watch on my phone while I'm on the cardio. That... makes
oh my
time
god!
Go
yeah, a little bit of music,
a
little bit
faster.
Of video when you're doing the cardio.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, definitely.
Podcasts don't, I found lately, podcasts can sometimes work depending on which one it is.
Yeah, well, it depends if I'm on that podcast. Right. If I'm on the podcast, yeah, it's good.
But like I've been, that's how I watched Lost in Space Season 2. I watched, tomorrow I'll watch Picard when I go to the gym. Because episode 4
Are you liking Picard?
I really like it. Is it the best it could have been? No. Is it free of politics? Not really, but nothing really is. But it could be a lot worse.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, the stink factor. I mean, look, J.J. Abrams could have done it, right?
Well, see, and then what else? Something else was just out.
Anybody watch Travelers?
No.
What is? Well, I don't even think I've ever heard of it.
Okay, Dor turned me on to Travelers. I don't know if he watches it or read about it and then told me about it and I got hooked on it. So Travelers is a Netflix original series. And basically there's a dystopian future about 500 years into the future. And they figured out a way to send people's consciousness back into a body in the past. And the way they do it ethically is a few seconds before the person would have naturally died, they send that traveler back and with knowledge on how to avert the accidental death. You know, whether it's like, hey, there's a car coming at you, roll over, you're going to fall down an elevator shaft, don't do it, that kind of thing.
It's OpenShot version 2.5 that has the hardware acceleration. I just put the links to the story.
Yes, I heard it read it in my ear while I was talking. It was very distressing.
So when they travel back in time to avert the tragic accident, does that mean they then occupy that body and that person is technically dead to history they don't ruin the timeline, so to speak?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. All that.
Okay.
So it's kind of interesting.
Wait a second. Hold on. So then that person wasn't supposed to die, or they were. Because if they were supposed to die...
The timeline paradox?
Right. I'm just curious. Right. Do they jump back in there because technically the person was supposed to die, but by them doing that, time ordained that they did take over the body?
Well, that you're not denying somebody else their natural life is basically the way they go about it.
Okay, but you're still then changing the timeline because that person should be dead, but then they're not dead. So it changes the timeline.
Correct.
Okay. Yes.
So, unfortunately, the way I watch TV or, you know, consume media like that video is basically I turn it on, fall asleep a few minutes later, and I just hear the noise throughout the night, and occasionally I wake up to it. So I never watch things sequentially, so that's a very big problem. So... I have to watch it many times to understand what actually, you know, it's a different order than I thought it was.
It'll depend on the show.
Right.
The most annoying thing with Picard is the fact they only release one episode a freaking week.
Yep. Yeah, I'm going to bounce. Guys, have a good show.
All right.
Later, Rich.
Mm-hmm.
Later, guys.
So you know what, Joel? You were just speaking about OpenShot.
Yes, sir.
I am very behind on a lot of stuff I was listening to. I just heard the episode of Linux for the Rest of Us where they read your letter about your dissatisfaction with the problems that you've had with the state of video editing software on Linux and using them, why you choose.
Yeah, I don't think OpenShot 2.5 is going to make that 100% better either. Wait,
is OpenShot video or is it
video?
Okay, so it's not what is the image one then? I guess it's just light table or dark table.
Light, well, for photos, yes. The Lightroom is the Creative Cloud version. The open source is Darktable, I believe.
Right.
That does similar things. One of the things that is a problem is features just like this hardware acceleration, where it lags behind. I mean, dude, hardware acceleration has been a thing in the Creative Cloud suite for years, like over a decade easily. So, I mean, that's one thing. The other thing, too, is like, for example, if I went out and bought a new camera, which I'm probably going to do before, not before too much longer, and certain things like, for example, Lightroom, Darktable does too, has the ability to correct your raw images, which I usually always shoot in raw. In the Nikon world, it's called the NEF file. I don't know what it's called in Canon, but every manufacturer has their own raw format. So there's multiple things with that. One is, can the software read it? And initially, when I got my Nikon I think the 3200, I think is the one I have, which is a I would say beginner SLR. It couldn't properly read and render the raw files. Like, for example, I would pull it into a Darktable and the image would be slightly pinkish no matter what I would do. So I just could never, it can never, either that or just never read the file. So, and other things too, like, for example, picking up the lens off of the EXIF data on the raw photo. So, and that's just because, you know, they have to rely on, you know, they have to have the hardware in order to write the appropriate things into the software so that it can actually correct those things. Now, the older cameras, you're more bound to have no problems with, whereas if you go to the latest greatest, which I don't always buy the latest greatest, but I do buy something that's relatively new, you know, that's maybe come out within the last 2 or 3 years, and sometimes those still aren't in Darktable. So of course you can just shoot in JPEG, and then that kind of gets around that. But one of the whole ideas of shooting in RAW is you can make the edits to the image, retain the RAW file, and then what I want to say, a non-destructive editing. So you could do a non-destructive edit, and in that you can still kind of do that with a JPEG. But then another thing with JPEGs is because they're so compressed, you're gonna lose some fidelity in the image. So, but the moral of the story is the open source developers that write this software can only rely on, one, who they have, and two, what hardware they have. Creative, Adobe has programmers that's what they do. They work with Nikon, they work with Sony, they work with Red and all the other different camera companies out there to get profiles into their software without impacting their ability to make the product. All right. Is something Adobe can do that the open source squirrel can't. Because if Nikon just gives their spec for their latest, greatest version of NEF to the open source community, then they're going to lose, they would lose a competitive advantage to Canon and so on and so forth. So there's always going to be a lag behind. Plus, the other thing too with the open source tools is they were approximating what for example, the GIMP was approximating what Photoshop could do 10 years ago. Photoshop can do a whole lot more based on some of the new features they've added within the last few years. A lot more automation. The camera raw feature in Photoshop is pretty dang on nice. You know, and I'm not saying that you can't do that with close open source tools, you can. It's just that if you want to do that with an image that came from a latest greatest device, you might have a problem with it. Unless it's JPEG, then you won't. But again, there's always that problem where you would lose quality with the JPEG. But I'm picky. That's the big thing there.
Joel hating on open source again.
Not entirely, because I use Cura, which is technically open source for slicing in open 3D printing world. So in fact, 4.5 beta just came out for Cura like 2 days ago. So I finally tried it. I'm using it on my yoga book. First, before I put it on my primary machine, which is my Surface Pro 6. We'll see how well it does. I did do a slice of a magnet I designed for Capital City Church, my new church. Same church, but that's our name now. And it did okay. Now, granted, I printed it on my i3 Mini, which I also fired up just to say that I did. And that's what I printed on. So one of the things actually I would love to find for that, and what would probably make me use it more, is if I can find a way to add a heated bed to it. And I don't even care if it hooks into the Arduino board, as long as I could turn it on, turn it off somewhere. If I can find something that would do that a little bit more consistently than the hairdryer, then it'd be fine. Because one of the things. One of the corners of my print on the i3 Mini warped a little bit. So, not horrible. It's still usable, but it just warped a little bit. And that's because probably more because of the drafts and stuff, errant breezes in the house than anything. So, but so the i3 Mini still is a great little printer to learn on, and it does well, like real small things, like the benchies. My benchies come out flawless on those. Benchy is the little tugboat that you see 3D printing people print. It's kind of a torture test for a 3D printer. But
quality test too.
That too. Well, because it's got places where you're bridging. The benchy can print without support, so. You don't need any support on it. On my CR10 Mini, I print a skirt on pretty much most of my prints, the only time I use anything other than a skirt, and a skirt on a 3D print is basically just the first little bit that it prints that's bigger than the 3D print itself to basically prime the nozzle a bit. The only other time I use anything other than a skirt is if it's something small and skinny that I'm printing vertically, because if I don't print with a brim or something like that, then I don't have sometimes I won't have good enough adhesion for the thing to stay upright. So if I print a brim on it instead of just the skirt, then that takes care of that, because it basically has the brim is basically attached to the bottom of the print and you can just peel it off. And I very rarely use a raft. Sometimes I will have to, but 3D printing. So, and then in more technical news, I ordered a Raspberry Pi 4 today, and it should get here tomorrow.
So you said, you said you were going to whack it into a box with an LCD or a display?
Yes. Yep. There is a case for it. On Amazon, they finally brought out one for the standard 7-inch touchscreen that the Pi Foundation releases, which is the screen that I did buy. That case will let me whack the screen into there. And
did you drop the case? Nice. There it is. Great. Nice.
I can.
Because I was just looking on Amazon trying to see if I could find it. I don't think I'm finding the right thing.
This one's specifically designed to take really any of the Pis, but it also will take a work for the Pi 4, and it has a fan on it too.
Yeah, I bought Pi 4 almost 2 weeks ago now. And today I took apart an old broken laptop and put together a screen for it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, actually.
How hard was that?
Not hard. I mean, you have to order the controller board from Amazon or eBay, and you got to make sure it's the right controller board. And then it's just a matter of hooking it up and having the power supply.
That's pretty cool.
And then I just took some poly board and used that to make a frame for it. And then I had,
especially if you had it layered around, that's a great use of it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that particular laptop was a 17-inch laptop, but it had been sitting collecting dust since before I moved to Dallas. So what?
Yep.
3-4 years now. 4 years now.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I put the links for the case there in the IRC and into the Mumble chat. Probably the thing I like about this one the most is it's very, very flexible in that it's not centered. The LCD is not centered in the case. It's off to one side, which I'm fine with. I don't care. But the reason it did that is it has three different kind of panels that you can put in on the face. One of them has Lego connections on it. As well as a hole for the standard Raspberry Pi camera that you can purchase, which I did not purchase that. But it also has a smooth one, and then it has a smooth one with the hole for the camera. And it also has a base, which, as you see it in the main picture, when you first click on the link, that's probably how I'm going to utilize it, because I'm kind of going to kind of have it as a little PC. I may attempt trying to use, since it's got decent amount of RAM on it, decent amount of power, I might try and use it as my Mumble machine for a show or two, just to test it. Otherwise, I'll just play with Linux on it, and I'll probably get either like a Bluetooth or some sort of wireless keyboard that I can plug into the USB ports on there. But there's more options too. Like, there is a different set of feet that you can put on the bottom that lets you basically attach it to the wall, which is also something I've thought about doing with it. But I probably won't on this one. If this works out like I think it might, I may end up buying another one or two just to do that with, just to mount it to the wall somewhere in the house, you know.
I dropped a link in the Mumble for where, I watched this video before I did it, from DIY Perks.
Nice.
So is that, you bought a controller board, and then does that hook into like an Arduino and then into the Raspberry? Is that a yes?
No, that's a
no. No, that converts the LVDS signals into what, HDMI?
Yeah. Oh, well, that one has an HDMI input, a VGA input, and I guess a coax input.
I had to look at the video. It's sponsored by Squarespace.
Yeah, I didn't order the same one as that guy because I'm using a different monitor, but you got to make sure to get the controller board for your specific monitor.
And the links to the actual controller board are the eBay links in the video.
I ordered mine from Amazon.
$23. HDMI, VGA, AV, which I believe is probably composite.
Yeah, composite. That makes sense.
Yep.
And then, there's technically three boards that come with it. There's the controller board, there's the LED board, which basically just powers your backlight, and then the buttons board.
Cool. So because I needed a power supply too, because the Pi 4 uses USB-C, I bought a Vilros USB power supply that also happens to have a power switch in the cord, which is kind of nice.
The one I got mine from Micro Center, so I bought the Pi from there, and I bought a case, an all aluminum case that had the fan built in and came with a power supply with a switch in the middle.
See, what I was actually looking for, I went with the LCD case because I just always would have loved to have an LCD with one of my Pis, so that's where this is going to go. But one of the ideas I always had was I would have loved to have something that's bigger than your standard run-of-the-mill Pi case, so that I can basically, that was designed to let the Pi, you know, like the USB ports and the Ethernet and all that stick out on one side, and then have space to mount things like hard drives and stuff. I just haven't found one that I like yet. I know there are some out there. I just haven't found one that I like. So that's kind of why I went with the LCD one.
You also have a 3D printer.
This is true. This is true. And I haven't found one on Thingiverse that I like either. I just haven't gotten around to designing one either, because I could do that. Well, I like the slimline one I have in my Pi, on my Pi 2. But fine. But
well, you have cases out there for the Pi on Thingiverse, and you would also, I assume, somebody's made a caddy for a 2.5-inch drive, and put the two designs together.
Yeah, do that in Tinkercad. That would work. Yep. Yep. It don't matter. I'm not really looking to put a lot of storage in this one. This is just going to be my play around one. I may buy the Pi 4 has Bluetooth, so I might buy another Bluetooth mouse to use with it. Even though I have the one I'm using here is a standard wireless Logitech one with the little dongle. I'm not buying the dongle mice anymore. I'm going to go just to buy Bluetooth ones. That's what, when my wife had one of these same mice too that I'm using right now, hers just started. I think her dongle might have started going out. I don't know. It just stopped working. I said, well, we're gonna buy you Bluetooth.
It shouldn't. Okay, I see what you're saying now.
Yeah, we replaced her old mouse with a Bluetooth one. so that one, it frees up the port and you don't have to worry about the dongle anymore. So
yeah. I like the idea of a Bluetooth mouse and being able to switch it around. But another thing to think about is Logitech, the universal...
Like a K400 or...?
No, well... They all come with their universal USB.
Right.
I can't remember the exact name of it off the top of my head. But yeah, their USB adapter, as long as you install Solaire on your Linux machine, you can actually switch between USB dongles.
Oh, that's kind of nice.
Yeah. And I like trackball mice, and the only Bluetooth one that gets made is made by Logitech anyway.
Oh, so you don't like, okay, oh, track ball, like, so that's basically a ball, okay.
Yeah.
Not the laser, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the trackball mouse, so that I can, you know, operate the mouse with my thumb, I'm usually in my comfy chair, and that doesn't
make for
real good use of a standard mouse.
There might be other ones, too, like, there was, that's the one thing with certain products now. There doesn't seem to be a lot of innovation in that kind of space like there was like in the 90s. Like one of my favorite channels on YouTube is LGR, and he's had this one out for a while, but there was I'm trying to remember the name of the.
There are several companies now that are making okay trackball mice. Sanwa makes one. They're a Japanese company. There's this other one. I'm using a Perix wired one right now.
Okay.
But when it comes to wireless, like Bluetooth, The only company that's really making a good one is Logitech. MX Ergo, which can either use the unifying, that's what it was, the unifying USB adapter.
Okay.
Or Bluetooth. It can switch between the two.
Now I did when I was was on call last weekend, and I didn't really have to stay in my office, but my office is kind of disgusting, so I just stayed in my office and cleaned it up, you know, while I was just dinking around watching videos and stuff on my Surface, and so I was cleaning out things and basically making it so that some of the stuff I just had sitting on the floor I can actually put in the closet. So I cleaned the closet out and got rid of some stuff in there. And one of the things I did find while I was in there is there was a Logitech Bluetooth keyboard that's designed like you can stick your it's got like a channel to stick your tablet in, like a tablet or iPad.
And that one's probably Bluetooth, and that's either the K370 or the 480.
I'd have to
either way, they're both great.
I have no complaints with it. The thing I like about it is it has a knob on it, and you can pair up to three devices.
I have that one. Yep. Up in my garage right now.
Yep. So like if you're traveling and you have your iPad or tablet and your phone, you can have it on both and then just flip the dial and you switch from one to the other.
Yeah. So it was really good when I was using it in the office. I've considered taking it back a couple of times because then I can switch between my tablet and my phone, and it's a whole lot easier to type on the phone with that.
And I like the design of it too. Besides the functionality, it's got a nice design on it, with the nice colors, green and black, and the landscape kind. Has a PC button as well as I think an I button on it too. I think the I button's for tablets. I don't know, but
yeah. And the thing about the MX Ergo is that. Well, even used, the cheapest price I can find for it is like $55. So,
yeah, they're not expensive. Now, I do have out in the living room by my TV, I have the K400, which is the one with the trackpad in it, which is a nice one to use with the Pi.
Well, the K400 is actually what I have at the office right now to use with my tablet.
In fact, I'm looking at this thing, and I need to clean the damn thing, too. It's just got stuff all over it, mostly dust. But I've used it with my iPad, and I've used it with my Nexus 7 back when it was actually worth using my Nexus 7.
Yeah.
I wish they'd bring out – it's the K480 is what I have.
And now is that the – okay, so it has the roll wheel on the side – That means it's the black and yellow, right?
It looks more green to me, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, I was talking about the trackball mice. I mean, when the MX Ergo first came out, it started out at like $120. And that's just too much for a mouse for me, especially considering Logitech. You know, yeah, they do sell good stuff, but all of their trackball mice, you either get one that lasts you 4 or 5 years, or you get one that lasts like 6 months.
Now, my Surface, I bought a cobalt blue Surface mouse. Not because it was Surface branded or anything, although it is the same color as my keyboard, but I like Microsoft. It's the one great thing they actually make good is most of their mice. I actually would like to pick up one of their Arc ones. But now my work laptop, I use a Logitech M557 mouse. Both of them are the most of my mice that I have are the mobile style mice. They're the smaller ones. I probably should at one point get a more desktop style one for when I'm at home, but not really caring. the mobile mouse does fine. It fits my hand fine, and it's not like you're micing with a mousing with the hockey puck mouse that the original iMac came with. Did you ever use one of those, Dan?
Use one of what?
The hockey puck mice that Apple shipped with the iMac, the original iMac.
Oh, yeah. With the cords.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it was the Bondi blue. Was that? I think was that the only color that one was in? I don't remember if they had a when they brought out the multicolored iMacs.
Didn't the mice match the color of the? I cannot imagine that Apple would not match the color.
I thought they did the at mouse least. Yeah, I thought they did for a while until they brought out that one that was like almost all clear, you know, where the whole top of the mouse was a button. The one thing hardware wise of Apple's that I've never really cared for was pretty much any of their mice. Although I will say this, I wouldn't mind getting one of the big giant wireless trackpads that they have. So, but nah. I don't have room for one of those anyway. But the Microsoft was the one that brought the wheels to mice. And I'm forever thankful for that because I love using the scroll wheel when I use a mouse.
They do make things easier. It's also, if you use them a lot, that's one of the first things to go.
Yeah, that's true too. It's not like it used to be, like in the days where we had to take our ball out of the mouse and clean the ball with some alcohol or something, you know?
But with trackballs, you still kind of have to do that.
That's true. But,
yeah, but rubber I really ball. Don't want to hear about what you do with your balls.
Hey, I'm looking at a mouse with a ball in a while.
I'm looking at different pictures of hockey puck mice, and I do see different colored ones. Just see an orange or reddish one. So I'm almost positive that they matched. Yeah, there's a green one. They matched whatever color that they came with.
I think it was the iMac DV that went away from the puck. I can't remember. We're freaking old, man. That's what it is.
Man, those. Yeah, I remember those.
I still wouldn't mind having an old iMac like that. That one or the G4 one with the floating screen.
Man, I'll tell you what though, they were pretty big and heavy, but they were a lot easier to carry around than.
What the one with the
monitor itself?
The one with the floating screen or just iMacs?
I'm not muted.
Yeah, you're not muted. I can hear you.
No, you're not.
That's all right. I mean the big what the I'm what was that one called the iMac the big picture
TV? The G4?
Yeah, I think was that the one that was like it was a monitor.
Or the one that was just all screen.
It was just a big CRT. And it had the big handle in the back.
Okay, the iMac and the iMac DV, the first iMacs, yeah.
Yeah, the first iMacs. They were pretty big and heavy, but they were a lot easier to carry around.
Handle and a top. Yeah,
they did some pretty good design on it. Gosh, man, remember when you'd buy a monitor and it'd have to be like this big-ass thing? Big-ass CRT monitor? Wow.
I remember when we got 22-inch LCD, or not 22-inch CRT monitors when I still worked at the college. And what's funny too is now see I have this 27-inch 1080p monitor. I actually got hooked into my laptop today for work and for right now. But it's a 27-inch one and it's got it's bigger screen wise than the monitor my wife got from her work that she uses. She has the old 24-inch Dell with the the one thing on that Dell screen that she has that I've always liked about that particular Dell screen, it's a Dell UltraSharp I think, but it just had this really adjustable arm on it, on Adele's. This HP screen, and I have really only kind of basically just up and down, you know. It's or back and forth, you know, so like you can tip the back of the screen up away from you, or the bottom down from, you know, away from you, or something like that. So basically that's it, you know. You don't have left, right, or anything like that, or the ability to put it in a portrait mode, which I wouldn't have done anyway. But that's what my wife does with her work monitor. She has at her work gave to hook to her laptop, is she has it pitched up into like a document mode, so that she can bring up the scans that she has to do the entry on. But I did get to use the old G4 iMac back in the day when I was in college. I took some classes on Adobe stuff, and one day I decided, well, let me try using the Mac version of it. It wasn't that bad. And I have a PowerBook now. I just need
one thing. How long ago was that?
The G4?
No, that you tried it.
Oh,
you're talking
God.
Back in the day, right?
Like, yeah, probably about 2004 or 2003.
I thought you were hitting that. You just tried it recently. I was gonna say.
No, not just recently.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's PowerPC based Mac. You really can't even get a recent version of Linux running on the G4 on the PowerPC Macs anymore. You can on Power. You know, server versions of Red Hat will run on Power, but better since IBM owns Red Hat now. But it does, and really, I don't think I think Power itself as a platform has got its days number because cloud computing companies like Amazon, Google, Microsoft, they're all Intel based. Every single one of them. There may be an outlier that's doing something with ARM, but yeah. Nope, doesn't really seem. I mean, most of the PCs you see nowadays, unless it's like a real thin laptop or something, are kind of boring. You know, nobody's doing anything real fun with it unless it's a gaming machine.
What are you going to do?
And I'm not going to, you know, I'd love to build a desktop, but right now I don't even have the space for a desktop.
You know what? How much time do you actually spend in front of your, would you actually spend in front of it, do you think?
True statement.
Because like I look at this, I'm like, man, I would love to have a laptop, you know, a new laptop. I would love to have a new desktop. I would love to have a new server, like all these cool things. And I'm like, well, come on, think about it, man. Are you gonna come all the way down here from your bedroom upstairs to surf the web?
You
Hell
just do
no.
it on your phone,
you
man.
Can pull out the phone. Oh, I wish I could pull out the Tide. I got to find the charger for it.
Oh, one of the things I got rid of. One of the things I got rid of was my Transformer E-pad, the first Android tablet I ever had.
Oh yeah.
I had the one, and I bought the keyboard too. I pulled it out of the closet, and I went to open it, and it went. It almost snapped in two. It's just like it was done. I think it felt like maybe the battery inside might have leaked or something. I don't know. I just got rid of it. It was too slow anyway for anything anymore.
It was a piece of garbage to begin with.
Oh, that original, yeah, that one, yeah. Oh, it was all right. You know, Honeycomb certainly didn't help.
You know what? You say buy a proper tablet, Joe. So here's the thing, right? I don't want a tablet. I don't like tablets. I do and I don't, right?
Do if you can hook a keyboard up to it.
Right. So like, I'm like, that's my problem. So I have a problem. Like, here's the problem. I don't want a tablet. I don't like a tablet. All the tablets I've ever used, except for the Jide. The Jide's the exception, right? All the tablets I've ever used have either been cheap pieces of garbage or they're really expensive and work well. But I'm like, I could just do all this shit on my phone.
But are only supported for about 2 seconds.
Yeah, so you got low support. Unless you're buying like an iPad. You know, there's just so much. You're right. There's that problem. You buy it and it's outdated in a year. You're not getting any more updates. But hold on.
Okay.
Well, no, hold on 1 second. And I'm like, I could do like pretty much everything I want to do on a tablet on my phone. But the problem is, I'm getting to that age where it's a pain in the ass to read stuff on the phone. Shit. Yeah, unless I get bifocals or I have these contact lenses that kind of operate like that, like, and the ones with the weight that are
heavy on the one side, yeah.
But it's not like bifocals, like how they have it striated in there that if you are focusing long distance, it gives you like that the proper lens refraction, and if you are focusing near, you're doing a different striation and it's a different lens actually angle and focus, so it helps with that problem, but it's not as good and my eyes are starting to get a little rough on that, like so I love to read comic books and I love to read books on the phone and sometimes I like to surf different things, but I'm like, I don't want to spend the money to get a decent tablet just to do that. I don't want those two devices, and I'm like, it frustrates me. But the phone. Anyway, you were gonna say, Joe.
Well, you probably shouldn't ever, you know, buy an Android tablet.
No,
because they're going to be a piece of crap. I mean, even the good ones.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to start with a Windows tablet. And it needs to be a decent one, preferably one with an i3 or an i5 processor. That you can then put Linux on. So a Surface does okay. I wouldn't go with the most recent generation. I'd go at least one or two generations back.
The 6 that I have now, it would probably be pretty well supported. The 7 is out. So.
Right, but you want the older one so you can actually put Linux on it.
Yeah, the 6 or the 5.
Yeah. I wouldn't go any older than like the 3 on that. Yes. And then there are some other ones, but you know, if I mention them, Joel's just going to roll his eyes so hard you can hear it from here.
You mean the shitty chewy ones?
No, God no. I was talking about the Dell Venue Pro 7130 and the 7140 actually did really well too. And
all right.
It clamshell design when you have the keyboard.
Yep. They're okay. I mean, I've never actually used one, but I've read up on them, and they're all right. I mean, yeah. But probably my most frustrating thing, at least with the basic Surface design, is unless you go with the Surface Book, there are no discrete graphics chips in them. It's all the Intel graphics, which, depending on what you want, could be okay. You know. It's doesn't bother me as much as I thought it would, that I didn't have a discrete card in it. But it still kind of does. My Surface Pro 6. My Surface Pro 6 does render video quite well.
And if they have USB-C, then you can hook up external.
The newer ones do, right. Yeah, the good thing about the Surface Pro 7 is they finally brought USB-C to it. The Surface Go also has it too, but the Surface Go cannot support the Thunderbolt from the, which is what USB-C can be, either USB-C or it can be Thunderbolt. It's the same connector on some devices like some of the MacBooks and stuff like that.
Is it 4-channel USB-C? Is the equivalent of Thunderbolt?
I have to look. I have to look up. I don't want to say for sure, but that sounds right. But and that's actually something I would consider when I bought a, if I bought a machine to replace my Surface Pro 6, which I'm not going to do anytime soon. But if I did, I would definitely make sure that I would have the ability to buy the external graphics, which would be nice. And the funniest thing is I wouldn't even use it for gaming.
You just hook it up the once, make sure the games could work, and then never use it again.
Well, no, I'd actually have it hooked up when I'm doing renders, so that I can use the CUDA cores in the external card to increase, basically speed that up a bit. And it does. I actually did some tests on my Yoga Book does have an NVIDIA card in it, not a great one, but it has one in it. And I did test both with the CUDA engine turned on and the CUDA engine turned off, and it does render faster with it on. So not much faster, but faster. Mostly because it doesn't have like I said, it's not like it's got a 1070 or a 1080 in it. It's like a 970 or something like that. It's not a very fast NVIDIA card in it. Because you see, that's probably what I would I'd buy. What's the new NVIDIA? The 2080 RTX.
Yeah.
Ray tracing. With the ray tracing, yeah.
Actually, the newest would be the 1660, but
right.
That's their cheapo model.
Right. Which ray tracing, yeah, ray tracing on Linux probably ain't happening anytime soon. But unless I'm wrong, I could be wrong on that. But actually, it may work because you're using NVIDIA drivers, so I don't know. Of course, I've been hearing good stuff about the AMD stuff now too, so they're finally catching back up a little bit.
Yeah, and the price for what you get is usually better with AMD.
Right, and I think they have like
and the difference in performance is negligible.
Right. Yeah, definitely. But I'll never do something like you ever watch a Jace 2 Cents on YouTube? He's a system builder. He I don't know how many systems he builds anymore, but he has a video YouTube channel, Jace 2 Cents, where he'll record different videos about it. Like one time he did one where he hooked up a like you ever seen one of them room air conditioners, they have the big kind of nozzle or hose at running out the top of it, but he basically hooked like a dryer vent and then pipe that into the computer case to see how ridiculous he can get cooling with that. And I think he also did liquid nitrogen too.
Put condensation on the computer and kill it.
Yeah. You see, most of like the ones he built a machine for Post Malone. He built one for Terry Crews, and a few different folks in California. And all those ones, he put liquid cooling on them. I have no interest in liquid cooling. I'd rather keep it all air. Besides, there's the fact of putting liquid near a bunch of electronics that just doesn't rub well with me.
I actually have considered liquid cooling. I mean, I've always been of the same opinion. I'm a computer scientist, not a plumber.
Right.
But recently, with how loud my, computer is in the living room, just for wifeful. No, just for spousal approval.
Right.
I was thinking about switching to liquid cooling.
See, I'm not a huge gamer anyway, but for me, the big graphics card's more about making it so I can render a video for church faster. So. It's one of those things too that I would never buy a, like a that kind of goes with anything with a church or really any kind of community based organization that's not high tech community, like a OLF's a little different or something like that, but like a church or non tech community kind of organization, you don't ever want to set something up that's really, really, really technical, because you're basically setting an organization up for failure. So, like, that's why we use Squarespace for our church website currently. And we use a streaming service called Boxcast, and they bought some software from Blackmagic called vMix for doing the streaming, which I've got my first Sunday in the booth, the streaming office this weekend. So wish me luck on that. But I could have set them up with OBS. They didn't really give me a choice at the time. Now that I've thought about it for a while, it's like, you know what? After I'm gone, who's gonna know OBS? You know, so I'm all about sustaining the mission of the organization.
But you want them to miss you when you go.
No, I want them to flourish. If I go and move on to another church or something, or if I have to move for my job or something, we have to go to a new church, then I want to make sure that this church is set up in a good standing, because that's the kind of guy I am.
Well, let me ask you this question, Joel.
Right.
So what are you using right now?
Website is currently Squarespace. It's very easy for people to maintain who don't have computer science degrees.
Wait, I thought you were talking about the video editing stuff.
For editing.
No, wait, what are you talking about? You want to make sure that it's easy for the person if you leave.
Yes.
Instead of using OBS.
Yeah.
What are you using instead of OBS?
Blackmagic vMix. I believe that's who makes it. vMix, VMIX.
And that runs on what?
Windows.
And could you do the same thing in OBS?
Easily.
So now, here's my question, right? Who else besides you is doing this?
There's a younger guy, and there is... most of the ones that are doing it other than myself are younger than I am.
Well, see, the reason why I say... Well, you say, well, you want to make sure that the people, you know, you use... My question is... Does it matter which one that you really choose? Because, I mean, unless you are specifically familiar and work with that application on a regular basis outside of what you're doing, I almost tend to see that anybody else that's going to come into this is going to have some level of comfort with technology and or these products. So it shouldn't really matter which one you use, because either they're going to be familiar enough to be able to handle technology, or they're not going to bother handling technology and they're just going to use what you show them. And
right.
And if something else happens when you're gone, they're going to have to go somewhere else to get help, regardless of what you use.
Right. Well, and here's the other thing, though, too. If they start to have a problem with the vMix software and I'm not available, they can pick up the phone and call vMix support if they need it. Luckily, they don't really have that much problems with it. But who does that for OBS other than a geek like me? I mean, I could definitely support it for a little while, but the thing is I want to make it such that if I am out of town or something, that I don't have to worry about it, you know. And vMix is something I don't have to worry about. It works, does what we needed to do. We have SDI cameras going into it, where we do 3 camera operation during the church service, plus we have NDI software loaded on the on a Mac that runs the projector slides for the lyrics and the Bible scriptures and stuff. And we were using something called Media Shout in the booth for that. And now they're using something called ProPresenter, which I believe is Mac only. And one big reason that you're using something like that instead of OpenOffice, which, you know, MediaShout is completely different than just OpenOffice for the lyrics, because it has all the song databases, it has the ability to show video and stuff like that. But the big thing the Media Shout and I believe Pro Presenter have is they come with the way to pull the scriptures in, and it's from any translation. We've used the Message, which is Eugene Peterson's not translation in his case. It's a paraphrase. NIV, American Standard, King James, whatever, we have it. And there's no open source software that does that. And there is open source Bible software, but there's no open source software that does that in the way that Media Shout or Pro Presenter does.
You should write it.
What, do I look like a programmer? I'm not.
Do you have a neck beard?
My wife wouldn't let me grow a neck beard.
Would you really want a neck beard?
No, it would be too itchy. It's Renewed Vision Pro Presenter. Actually, it's quite a nice package of software. Actually, I haven't messed with it, but I do like the visuals it provides. So, and I do dislike software that's built specifically for certain types of organizations. I like general software. You know, for example, I'd love it if we didn't have to have specialized software that includes Bibles and stuff like that in there, and and if I were to write software like that, I would write it more like a general, but then include a module that, you know, that if someone wanted to do that, they can plug in. In my case, what I'd probably do is I'd figure out a way with YouVersion to pull in the Bibles from online instead of something like that. But it would have, I'd have to probably license. I don't even know if they have an API that you can write to. Yeah, they might. I haven't even looked into it, but I do need to learn Python, because a lot of our stuff, a lot of the automation they're looking to do with if you're doing an AWS, they usually want you to do it in Python. So I do need to start picking that up, but Python is not, it's not a hard language to learn. It's just I haven't gotten around to learning it yet.
So this is something cool I learned, right? So on my street, there is a professor of astrophysics, a NASA rocket and scientist lives across the street. I'm actually babysitting his dog. An Air Force historian and an engineer that works at the Hadron Collider up here in Newport News. And the latter, his wife is going back to school for cybersecurity. So I was cleaning up the other day, and the book that I had won at Southeast Linux Fest last time we were there in the raffles, I picked up was called Penetration Testing. And I'm like, as much as I would love to just mess around with this stuff, I'm like, I don't have time, and I'm not going to have any time. And by the time I haven't picked it up in these, since I went to Southeast Linux Fest to do anything with it, I'm probably not going to pick it up in the next couple of years, right?
Right.
So I'm like, what am I holding on to this for? So she was outside the other day, so I walked over to her, and I was like, hey.
You gave it to her?
I have this book. Do you do anything with penetration testing? She's like, oh, we just started talking about that in my class. And, I gave her the book, and I said, if you have any questions about it, I don't know if you use Linux or anything. She's like, oh, yeah. She's like, we have Linux. We're running it on a laptop in the house, and her husband uses it a lot at work. And I was like, well, of course. They're engineers. They're all using Linux. But it was pretty cool that they're running Ubuntu on their laptop that they that use cool. on a fairly regular. So I was like, that's, you know, it's everywhere, man.
Yep. Yep. A lot of people don't really realize that, until they take the Linux kernel out of Android, you got a little Linux computer in your pocket if you got an Android phone.
I don't know. You really think they're going to get around to doing that?
No.
Probably.
No, no, no. In fact, I think what's probably going to happen is I think Microsoft's going to make a change to Windows at some point where the kernel that it runs on will be the Linux kernel, but then they still have it so they can run Windows software on top of it. I think that's probably going to happen at some point in time.
I can see that.
Yep.
Because people certainly as hell weren't happy with Microsoft these past couple of weeks with all that upgrade fiasco.
Well, I tell them, they kind of are doing that though with that dual screen machine they're bringing out that runs Android, and they're running a layer on top of that that lets you run Windows 32-bit and actually I think Windows 64-bit software too.
Wait, how's that running Linux?
It's running Android. And then there's a layer, the Surface Duo, I think it is, or the Neo.
Do you recommend the Edge browser, Joel?
Hell no. Although now I think it is based on the same engine as Chrome. So
it's Chromium.
Right, Chromium.
It's skinned Chromium, and buzz is we'll eventually see it on Linux, where it'll get used by like two people. Me.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me. I mean, you got SQL Server on Linux now too, so.
Got PowerShell on Linux.
It's true.
But does anybody use PowerShell on Linux?
On Linux? Probably not. We certainly don't. We're using Corn Shell.
You're using Corn Shell?
Yep.
Why?
Because that's how our software, that's basically a requirement for our software. Because you got to remember, we came from Big Iron Linux, or Unix, I mean. So we were running on Solaris. We were running on IBM AIX and HP Thunderdome. I think it's Thunderdome. Yeah.
Somebody ought to rewrite that shit for a modern shell, right?
I'd like to see if they can get rid of the Unidea layer altogether, but and we just it's just like, you know what, isn't it funny that like you ever go into like a call where you have a problem, like a performance issue or something with something you're working on. And then, like, before your next call about the same subject, you find the support issue that says, oh, yeah, we know this is an issue. That's exactly what happened to us this week.
Wait, I have a question for you, Joel. Like, all the people that you work with that are doing the stuff and working in the corn shell, are they all mm-hmm. old people?
Yeah.
I mean, because I'm just curious, like, I've done stuff in Corn Shell, but that was almost 20 years ago.
You know what?
I'm like, who the hell knows? Where are you going to find somebody like a young person much experience with Corn Shell?
I'm going to tell you this, Dan. There's not that much of a difference between Bash and Corn Shell. There really isn't.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, I'm sure anybody.
Or even Dash, for that matter. Right. But the nice thing that the Corn Shell has that some of the other shells don't is there's a lot of things that would go out to, like, GNU tools like LS and I'm trying to remember. There's a list of some things that you normally go to a GNU program like LS or – I don't know why I keep saying LS, but it's probably not LS. But there's certain things that In other shows, you would have to go out to those other programs. Let's just build into Corn Shell.
That's probably a reason why you go out to those other programs. They do them better.
That's a possibility, but yeah. At the time, no.
It's interesting because I don't see much like that. When you hear somebody who like does a lot of work in ZSH or Fish, right? And not to disparage any of those shells, but in most environments, you're going to be using Bash.
You would think, right?
Right? And going forward, people have... And maybe I'm completely wrong, but in all the environments I've ever worked in, and all the companies, and every company I've dealt with, I never really heard anybody that's doing stuff, you know, unless it's legacy carryover, would elect to use, like, Fish or Corn Shell. Not saying that they're bad shells or anything like that, but to just not... There's a difference. Mm-hmm. Like I know some people.
Do people
who
actually
do that.
Write things in Fish? Or do they just steal it from Bash?
I know some people who use Fish, but they only use it themselves. They don't like
write things.
Anything that they do, if they're going to give it to somebody else to use or share it, it has to work.
Well,
in Bash.
I got news for you, Dan. There are some Linux guys that probably treat Python more like a shell than we would ever treat Python.
and I knew different people do that with Perl too, and stuff. But
it's all in what you know in some cases.
But it's not just what you know. Like if you go into a company and you're like, you guys are, I'm just gonna start switching everything over to using Fish and. Then you try to work with other people or Corn Shell, and they're like,
"Well,
and you're like,
well, there's that little thing of making sure that what you do for an organization, and this, by the way, it's not just community organizations; it's for your company too, is supportable."
That's why I'm like, I'm curious if they have plans to migrate their toolset off of Corn Shell because it's just not something I see.
No
plans. A younger generation having much experience with.
Yep.
You narrow your pool. It's not
for
that you can't learn,
don't
but...
know what Corn Shell is brought out first on the, I believe, AT&T Unix, developed by David Korn at Bell Labs in the early 80s. And the latest version that I know of is KSH 93. Yeah. Old stuff, man.
93T plus...
Yep.
1983.
But at least we don't run CDE.
Common
desktop.
Is that still around?
It is if you run like a power workstation or something like that, or I don't know if they still make them, but Xerox had a line of the office printers that ran Solaris as the printer controller. It basically had a Solaris computer attached to the printer, and it ran CDE.
So
it wasn't CSH?
No, they had CDE and CSH on. Oh, excuse me. Yeah, they had CSH on, but CDE is the X desktop that they use.
So I'm at this page, the Open Group page, where I just put in a common desktop in the Google, and I click on it. And it talks about the CDE. What is a common desktop environment? Then it has open source CDE that is now available. And you click on that, and it's common desktop environment.
You don't want to use it. It's
open
ugly
source
as fuck.
Release, 6th of August, 2012, and a link to the source force. Wow. I guess that's not really updated anymore.
Or it's like
it?
Sawfish or Widowmaker, which doesn't, well.
Hey, there's no you talk bad about Window Maker. That's still it's time for that quarterly check-in.
OpenStep, remember OpenStep? That was on Next computers.
Well,
that's where that started.
Okay, The latest stable release is 0.95.8, which was released on November 3rd of 2017.
for 3 years Vegas. Old. in a Fluxbox and all that. Yeah, it's funny nowadays in the Linux community. It's more about writing stuff for the server and for the cloud than it is about writing desktop software anymore. I mean, the desktop software. What's the latest version of OpenOffice now, and is it being updated anymore? You know.
All right, so GNU Step is the version that we would get for Linux.
And the one that was always known for eye candy, Enlightenment.
What version is...
Well, Enlightenment's probably still DR18, which is technically 0.18.
Oh, this is a pain in the ass. Trying to find what version of GNU Step is like. Okay, maybe the project wiki. Well, it looks like there's still development going on.
What about FEWM?
No, I think we looked that up recently. FEWM hasn't been. Oh, no, I think I stand corrected. Latest release is 2.69.
Enlightenment is up to 0.23. And EFL is 1.23.
Wow. September 5th, 2019 was the latest release of FEWM.
Holy shit, really?
Yeah. So Sawfish,
or the awesome window manager.
Yeah, that's still going out, I'm pretty sure. Joe likes awesome, right, Joe?
I like being awesome.
Yeah, you like being awesome.
You don't even know what awesome is, do you, Joe?
Just when I look in the mirror.
So yeah, it doesn't look like Sawfish has had a release since 2017 either.
Of course, I remember in around that time when Linux was starting to rise in popularity, the other OS that was out there was QNX. Remember that?
Yes. I haven't played around with QNX in a long time. Don't they have a virtual machine of that or something?
They may.
I bet you they have a Docker container of it. Maybe not.
There's also Haiku, which is what branched off from BOS. Nobody gives a crap about operating systems anymore.
Who doesn't give a crap about operating systems?
Most people.
You give a crap about operating systems.
Of course we do, but... According to the Book of Knowledge, the last version of Sawfish was July 30th, 2016. And the initial release was January 1st, 2000.
Wait, what was the operating system? Like, that is BIOS.
But BIOS.
The open version of it was like
Haiku.
Haiku, that's right.
And it's actually still in
yes,
somewhat active development.
What? They're fundraising right now.
It's like every once in a while I'll go trolling through eBay and think maybe I'll buy one of those things that I've always wanted to have but never got around to buying, like things like the Palm Life Drive, which was a Palm OS-based device that had a 4-gig hard drive in it.
How much is that you're going to get for the functional for 50, that?
$50.
$50. Is it going to run? Yeah. Is it going to work?
Yeah, it should, I think. Now, I don't know. I don't know if you could actually connect it to a computer and actually have it synchronize or do anything. But it's like the Nokia device. Like, I have those Nokia internet tablets over here. I got the two N810s that are functional, and N800 that's functional but is missing the back on it. But there's nothing I can really do with them other than have the OS that's on it. There wasn't – at one time there was, what, MIR, I think, a couple other spin-offs to hopefully extend the life of them, and they're just not viable. And part of the other thing with making those viable is that they're so damn slow compared to anything modern. you know, they're, what, 400 megahertz X-scale processors. Actually, I'm sorry, TIO map. But my watch has a faster processor. My Michael Kors watch that runs Wear OS.
You got that for you got that with Attaboy points, didn't you?
No, I just bought that one. Excuse me, I just bought it. I actually do use it. I usually make sure I put it on. I don't wear it around the house. But like if I go to the gym or something, I like to wear it because one of the nice things about it is it will monitor my heart rate every, like, I think every 5 seconds it takes the heart rate on it. Which is as old farts get older, it's going to become more and more important. But I mean, I've been doing good with the gym. I was going to go today, but like right at like dinner time, we got like a quick, about half inch probably out there. And the roads were a mess because I don't think anybody expected it, not even the city. But I can tell you one thing. I haven't actually tried it yet, but I set up – one of the things that I kept having an issue with my drone is – because I don't – you know, because I can't fly every day, right? You know? So I have the batteries are constantly sitting on a charger. And if I just have it plugged into a regular outlet – invariably, when I go and hook everything up, the battery is discharged in storage, even though it was sitting on a charger. Because what'll happen is when the battery for the Mavic gets charged up, the charger will shut that port off, and the charger I have can do up to like 4 batteries at a time. So I thought, how can I fix this? So I'll have to check it out the next time I go and fly. But what I did, I had that Wetton power strip that's got Wi-Fi in it. That's, you know, and uses a GEENI. The app is called GEENI to control it. It can also work with the Google Assistant. So what I did is in Google Assistant, I said, at 8 a.m., turn off this outlet on the power strip. And at 10 p.m., turn it back on. So then what happens is I turn the power off, turn it back on, and my hope is that while they're in storage mode, i.e. sitting on the charger, that by doing that, it will automatically keep those batteries topped off. I'll have to see if it's actually working like I think it will. Because that's a problem, like, with a thing, and I might buy another one of them power strips for my office just for things like my cordless drill and stuff like that. Because it has the same kind of problem if you just let the battery sit on the charger.
Right.
When it tops off, it shuts the charger off, and it doesn't turn it back on when the battery starts to trickle the power out. So I think I might try to do something like that to see if I can't keep at least one of the batteries for the drill charged all the time. So that when I go to grab my cordless drill, I don't have to wait a half hour or so for the damn battery to charge up. Seems hey, to me that that kind of stuff should do that for you automatically now. Joe,
I had a question for you. And I just was curious on clarification. Because this goes way back to the beginning when Joel was talking about the LCD touch panel case that he got for his Raspberry Pi 4 that connects into the display port. What the hell do they call that display port?
LVDS.
Is it LVDS? Actually,
yeah, I believe it is. And that's one of the ports that are on top of the Pi that it would hook into. Yes. It doesn't directly hook into the HDMI port.
Yes. You know what? I went to the Raspberry Pi website looking for just like a breakdown of all the pieces, components on it, and like just a diagram that would show you what
graphics chip and stuff. Yeah,
like what is this here? So the only one they show you is like, here's the gigabit Ethernet port, here's USB 3.2, stuff like that. But the two-lane MIPI DSi and two-lane MIPI CSI camera port, one's a display port, camera port. Like, I think I know which ones they are, obviously, just looking at it, but I wasn't 100% sure. Are you connecting into that with your laptop LCD, or is it just go right into the HDMIs?
HDMI.
Okay, I was just curious.
See, he basically got the converter to convert that. And he could have gotten one that will work in that port on the top. Like the official screen does.
Well, can you get that on a board to do that for your?
Yeah.
No, for Joe's display.
Yeah, you should be able to. I would think.
I don't know. It'd be something to look into.
Yeah, I think it's LVDS, which is what pretty much all laptops uses for the internal displays.
All right, we gotta wrap this show up.
Yeah, it's starting to get late.
People gotta get to sleep.
What's that?
That's what I like to do for the next 6.5 hours.
Go pray.
Stare at the back of your eyelids for at least 5 hours.
Check your eyelids for light leaks.
All right, here we go. Here are your promos. Thank you, everybody. Have a safe and happy Valentine's.
Yeah, one thing I shouldn't mention, and I am kind of sad about this. My mom and dad's wedding anniversary would have been Friday.
Oh, I'm sorry, man. They were married on Valentine's Day?
Yes, they were. And this year it would have been 50 years.
Oh, that's tough.
Which really sucks.
Yeah, I'm sorry, man.
But oh well.
How's your dad holding up?
I need to talk to him this week. I also need to talk to the wife and say, hey, I'm going to send him down a gift card or something just so that he can keep his mind off of it. And I think I might give him a Texas Roadhouse gift card so he can get a big old steak.
There you go. All right.
So, have a happy Valentine's Day, folks. I'll try to.
Yep, here's your promos. Talk to you in a week. Do it, everybody.
Oh, my God. It's Hacker Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night for the interactive live show. Visit LHSpodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Jay Wisher, Honky Magoo, 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduk to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com. IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Sitting here flipping through Facebook, and what do I see in a Walmart ad on Facebook? But Walmart selling the OEM Motorola R2-D2 Star Wars limited edition multimedia dock for the Droid 2.
That's a mouthful. Holy crap. I didn't even have no idea where the hell you were going with that. Who the heck has a Droid 2 anymore?
Yeah, no
How
shit.
Much is it?
$8.
$8. How much was it when it first came out? You know?
That dock was probably $50, I'm thinking.
Yeah. Wow. That's something.
And Google Assistant didn't know when it was. No. I tried to ask the Google Assistant what when the Droid 2 came out, and then it asked me if it was still a good phone, and I'm like, no.
it's 12.
Droid 2 came out in August 12th, 2010. 10 years ago.
You know, when I look at, when we're looking at the pictures of the iMac and the hockey puck mouse, it reminds me of how it was back then.
Yeah, huh? And how different it is now.
I miss like that newness and the challenge and like it was like really different. It didn't all just come, even if you were using Windows or whatever, it didn't all just come together. And there wasn't like this massive, it wasn't all online. It was applications that you would get and run. And it's sometimes I miss it. Sometimes I do. I miss the old computers.
Nowadays, you just want your OS to run a browser.
Yeah, I really miss Chromebooks.
Chromebooks are enough.
Those days.
I'm going to say you don't even have to technically have a software slicer for the Android, for 3D printing. You could just use like a Octopi. And if it's set up right, you can just send the STL to the Octopi, and it'll slice it up there and then print it right from the Octopi instead of putting it on an SD card like I do.
There you go.
But so technically, even for 3D printing, you don't need to have a regular computer for it, although you would have to have one to probably set up the Pi. At least capable enough to make the SD card image. And you probably could buy that already done in some cases.
Wait, say goodnight, Joel.
Good night. No, that was a recording, dude. Rich isn't even here.
Darn.
Ah.
He was here.
He was.
There he is again.
No, Rich, though. There's Rich.
Darn it, Rich. I'm all talking smack guys, about you, and then I have to realize.
And I just like to get a little on my tongue.
Are you propositioning Joel again?
Damn right I am.
Pie 4 gonna be in the house tomorrow.
Who the what?
I said I bought a Pie 4 and it's gonna be delivered tomorrow.
Oh.
I know, you'd already have one.
Two.
Yeah, I figured. I found a neat power supply for it, a Vilros one with the that actually has a power switch in the cord.
Is it the Pie 4 4 gig?
Yes, sir. That's what I got.
And what you gonna do with that massive amount of memory?
I'm gonna stick it in a case with an LCD.
Uh-huh. It's funny, I got an LCD, I haven't opened it up yet. Probably had it for a long time too.
I need to dig around and find a micro USB cable. Because for some dumb reason, my headset is out of juice.
That was Hitler's problem also.
That was, trying to think. It's just old, so it's probably, that's probably what's going on here. The battery's probably shot.
Digging the Galil, Rich.
What's that, Pat?
I'm digging the Galil.
What? Oh, you got it? You got out of a hostage situation?
Yeah, the Galil. ATI Galil. It's really nice. Shoots great. It's really soft.
Cool.
It's like, the finished Valmet was like an improved AK version. Mm-hmm. This is like an improved Valmet.
Oh, yeah.
In 5.56.
Oh, it is 5.56?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know. Cool.
Yeah,
they and AR mags? What kind of mags?
It's proprietary mags. That's the only thing. But they're cheap. They have Tapco. You know, usually Tapco is garbage. But these are new ones, specific for this rifle.
They have metal inserts?
Let me see. Hold on. No, they're all plastic, but they're really, really nice, and they're really well made, and they ran fine. I filled them all up, and I ran them, and they ran flawless.
Oh, good, good.
Like $14 a piece.
You know, I guess I'm used to ARs, which, you know, a decent AR, you know, Magpul AR, you can get $10 a piece pretty much anywhere, almost any time.
For proprietary AK mags, right, it's not bad.
Right.
I have the Arsenal 5.56 pistol, and that thing takes the Bulgarians and then the Polish Greenies, and those are expensive.
Yeah, I forget who was having it, but they had, you know, like a Draco 5.56 pistol, and it took AR mags.
Right. Sativa has got a pistol now. You can get it on Atlantic Firearms. And it doesn't like the Arsenal mags, but it likes the Polish mags. The Polish mags are great. Those things run in everything. I have both 5.56 and 7.62x39s. And then even in non-AKs that take AK mags, they run flawlessly. Those old Palmer Polish mags are very good. And they're relatively cheap. Well, my brother's got some Israeli metal mags he's going to give me for this. We'll see how those run. They're new. Then, you know, some of the surplus ones, you know, the springs are all shot. But the ones he picked up, he bought mags for a rifle he never got.
Ah.
I've done that before.
I hear you.
And so he's like, yeah, I'll give them to you. I'm like, okay.
So, you know, I've kind of been looking. I had an idea that, first off, in Florida, if you have more than an acre, you know, anything greater than an acre, you can shoot on your property. You just have to have backstop. So I'm like, well, you know, I don't really want to shoot on my property. I would if I set something up and, you know, used a silencer, that kind of thing, I would. Because I don't want to piss off my neighbors. Well, I was like, hey, maybe there's some farm property. You know, I could talk to the guy that owns it. And I started looking around and looking around, looking around. Believe it or not, because of just roads and all that bit and geography, the new range they're putting in, the county's putting in Palm Beach, is actually crazy close to my house if they open up the back road. It's the difference between it being like a 45-minute drive or a 20-minute drive. So I'm like, whoa.
How's the public ranges down there?
I've only read about the Broward range, and it wasn't a good review. You know, just a lot of range Nazis.
Rich.
Dan.
When you said they just need to open the road behind your house, like you don't mean like behind your house, right?
No,
like,
no. There's
a little down. I'm like,
right.
You could just like pave the driveway a little longer, right?
Yeah, not the case. Correct, Dan.
Well, you know what? Well, the mailman would find a way to get there.
Gosh, I got to put like a fucking strobe light on my mailbox so the mailman can find my crap. I couldn't tell you how many times I've supposedly had something delivered and it wasn't.
Well, you still have the video of when he drove all through your yard, right?
Yeah, that wasn't my regular mail person. And I'll tell you what, I don't blame my regular mail person. My road is in three different segments.
Okay.
And I think it gets sorted and packaged and, you know, like earmarked to go to a different segment of my road. I think my mail person is doing a good job in delivering, you know, what is in the bundle to my house. I'm just thinking my crap's getting in another bundle.
It's a good thing I work from home because I started, I won't say always meeting the mailman out there, but I'm usually pretty sensitive. I can usually hear when he's driving down the street. Monday I had a package that was supposed to arrive. I go out like right after he drove past the house. I look in the mailbox, it's not there. And I kind of wave my hand and the guy is like, oh yeah, hold on. I got it. I'm like, oh, dude, really? I'm like, really? I'm like, how do you do that? That's not the first time it's happened either. It's happened before. Like one time it's like, don't these male people know that they have tracking and we know when it's out for delivery? God.
Well, so here's the thing.
If you're not home.
I think the whole deal is every job on the planet is being made that there's just a warm body that nobody has to think or do anything anymore. Nobody sorts.
Yeah.
It used to be, and I don't know if my old neighborhood and Islip changed, but if you put Hughes in Islip, we got the mail. You didn't have to do anything else.
Yep. But I got attaboy points at work. They have like a system where they give you points, and when you get points, you can buy stuff. So I got a new monitor for my office.
Good for you.
27-inch 1080p. Not the greatest one in the world, but it's good enough for me and what I need it for. It doesn't have speakers, and I wish it did have that, but doesn't.
Oh, hey, just a reminder. Dan, you're recording, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, there, as always, it's an annual event. There are post Super Bowl TV deals out there.
And wait. You want to save this for the show?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Because I need to do a lot of talking at the beginning of the show because I'm going to jump.
All right. You know, I was going to say, Rich, we have almost a similar problem because in this town, I live on 8 Pratt Street. And there is another 8 Pratt Street on the other side of town.
Oh, crap.
Yeah. Oops. And, like, UPS and United States Postal Service, no problem. FedEx never uses zip code, tends to deliver to the other place.
Ugh.
Great.
Yeah.
Does Amazon get it right?
Amazon's real good.
Well, what do you mean? You mean Amazon themselves? I don't think I've ever had anything delivered. I've not noticed anything delivered.
You'll know the tracking number starts with like a TB, Tango Bravo.
TBA, yep.
You know, I never really look at the tracking number anymore.
Do that, and you'll know who's delivering it.
I don't even know shit's showing up, right? Kids get paid, you get their, you know, whatever. And next thing you know, there's a flurry of packages showing up the next day with my name on it. I'm like, oh, when did I buy a bra? I don't remember.
Yeah. You know, they ought to have sub accounts just like on Netflix. So it says, who's watching? And it's like, dude, it's me. Really? You don't know it's me?
Well, I don't understand. For some reason, one of my daughters can figure that out.
there is a way to do that?
Apparently, because she get, you know what it is? It's, so you mean like sub accounts that it keeps everything separate, or sub accounts in that it comes to somebody else's name?
Right. So it comes to somebody else's name, same billing, all that.
Just set up another mailing address and put a different name on it. I'm assuming that's what she does. You know, I should actually go in and look, because anything that she gets from Amazon goes to her.
That would make sense. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
So